Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show from the Labatt Blue Studio. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Bleed blue and white, drink blue and light. And don't forget to try the new Labatt Blue Light Seltzer Variety Pack, available at retailers throughout Pennsylvania.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante, and we're continuing our conversation with Mike Agovino, the executive producer of the podcast, With the Benefit of Hindsight. It's going to be a 19-part podcast. They're up to, I believe, episode number 9 with it. It's a must-listen. Definitely go to your Apple podcast store. Go get it. You won't regret it. A lot of fantastic information. Mike, when we were wrapping up quarter number 1, we were talking about the timeline for the incident with Mike McQuarrie and Sandusky in the shower. The timeline, it did change initially, was a year earlier, but you were telling us, based on what happened, Mike McQuarrie talked about it was such a quiet time on campus. Well, the fact is, it wasn't quiet. He probably got his dates wrong, and the meeting with Paterno actually happened in February. But the incident where Mike saw Sandusky in the shower happened like 6 weeks earlier at the end of December, and it coincides with a lot of other things in the story, with where Sandusky drove to Pittsburgh and back with the person he was with in the shower, the young man. Everything fits for December 29th. Some folks might say, well, what's the big deal? That the same thing happened, but just on a different day. What is the significance that that incident happened in late December, but he talked to Joe Paterno 6 weeks later?
Well, if, as the Commonwealth said, he witnessed an act of sodomy in the shower, waiting 6 weeks to tell someone about the incident doesn't exactly communicate a sense of urgency about what he saw. What would communicate a sense of urgency? Jumping in the shower, beating up Sandusky, pulling them apart, going to the police, going to Paterno immediately, even that wouldn't communicate a sense of urgency. But certainly waiting 6 weeks, I think, assures all of us that he did not see sodomy. Now, how do we know he waited 6 weeks? The way we are extremely confident he waited 6 weeks is we know that Mike McQuarrie's dad, John, and the doctor, Jonathan Dranov, had a meeting with Gary Schultz late in February of 2001. And that meeting was on another matter. But at the end of that meeting, they asked Gary Schultz for a progress report, for a status report. I know you talked to Mike. What's happening with your investigation? And each of them testified in separate hearings that meeting took place 2 to 3 months after the incident with Mike, after they became aware of what Mike had seen. So our interview with Gary Schultz, Gary expressed surprise that they would be asking for an update. He had met with Mike less than a week prior to meeting with them, and so thought it was very strange they would already be looking for an update. Well, they weren't already looking for an update. They had heard about it from Mike. They had learned of it from Mike in their memory 2 to 3 months back. Well, go about 2 months back from February, and you're in December. And so in John analyzing the dates, that was a rare year, the year 2000. Penn State did not make a bowl game. So the football season ended by late November. December 29th is over the Christmas and New Year's holidays. And so campus is desolate. So everything about that date fit the description from McQuarrie, but it also fit information that came from Jerry Sandusky, because that date of December 29th corresponded to a date that that he found out while returning to State College from a book signing tour he was on with a second mile kid. It's the date he found out he wasn't getting the head coaching job at the University of Virginia. So the date is significant because it triggered him to remember the date he didn't get the job with Virginia, and that he was with victim number two, a boy, a man by the name of Alan Myers, and that they showered at Lash that night, which was December 29th.
Got it. And one other point might be, in Mike McQuarrie's memory, a decade later, recalling it, February 9th would normally be a month after their season if they went to a bowl game. On this particular season, their season ended in November. So if the incident happened in December, it was actually 1 month after their season ended. Let's go back to, it wasn't the McQuarrie seeing Sandusky incident that created the state investigation. It was actually an incident, something that happened at Central Mountain High School, where Jerry Sandusky was helping out there, helping coach, and had a particular interest in a student there, was looking to help him out. And that was a young man at the time by the name of Aaron Fisher. And there was accusation of inappropriate touching there. And that's what actually prompted the investigation by the state. Mike, could you share with us how that all developed and how that led us to the Mike McQuarrie, Jerry Sandusky locker room issue?
Well, so Aaron Fisher, so-called victim number one, was a gifted track star and wrestler, and someone that that Jerry had taken an interest in, trying to help him overcome some challenges he was facing in life and in school. And this is a behavior that Sandusky repeated numerous times over the years, seeing himself as a father figure to some of these second mile kids. And Fisher was exactly that to him. But Fisher, as he got older, was into a lot of other things, girls, drinking, stuff like that. And on a particular weekend that he was supposed to be leaving with Jerry on a Friday, he told his mother he didn't want to go, and that Jerry made him feel strange, and that Jerry put his arm around him, and Jerry put his hand on his knee when they were driving in the car. And from that, his mother, a woman by the name of Dawn Fisher, came downstairs, and according to her next door neighbor, Josh Frabel, told Josh, "I'm, quote, going to own that MF's house," referring to Sandusky. Dawn had been exposed in with her brother to abuse in the Dr. Barry Bender case. She knew a significant amount about it. Fisher at the time said Sandusky never touched him. There was no abuse. He just made him feel weird, and he didn't want to go with him that night. But she pressed forward regardless. She went to the school where she filed the complaint. The school told her that her son had a reputation for not necessarily telling the truth and was in a lot of trouble, and that the school supported, believe Sandusky's version. She told them that she was going to go to CYS if they didn't file the case. So they did, and it went to a young caseworker at CYS, and Jerry Sandusky made the decision to go see this person, to sit across from this caseworker, and during that session, she decided that she believed that the case was worth investigating, and declared it founded. I should note that that we have since talked to friends and the ex-wife of Aaron Fisher, and been led to believe that Fisher was abused, but that he was abused by his stepfather, who pled guilty to 100 counts of abuse, and I believe is still serving time in a Georgia prison. And so what the caseworker responded to was not Fisher saying he was abused by Sandusky in any way, shape, or form, but that what she saw in Fisher were, you know, behaviors that led her to believe he had been abused. Well, we've come to find out, yeah, he was abused, but not by Sandusky.
But did that not Fisher testify against Sandusky? Was there not a case of the repressed memories where a therapist worked with him and he did end up testifying against Sandusky?
Yes. So a therapist that had a relationship with CYS, a guy by the name of Mike Gillum, began seeing Aaron, and over the course of time, Aaron's story changed, and he now, quote unquote, remembered being abused by Sandusky. The grand jury was formed because of CYS's declaration of founded to the incident, and for 2 years, all through 2009 and 2010, the grand jury was investigating Sandusky. And during that time, they talked to over 600 different former Second Mile kids, 600 different kids. Not a single one of them told them that they were ever abused by Sandusky. Aaron Fisher himself had attempted to testify to the grand jury two times and was unable to do so. He broke down on the stand. He couldn't get his story straight. Two different times, it broke down. A third time, they allowed him to testify. They actually let him read a statement that was prepared by Mike Gillum rather than him having to answer questions. So he was never actually able to give on his own an extemporaneous account of things to the grand jury. But for 2 years, all they had was Fisher's story.
Got it. Okay. Again, so much information here. We are going to pick up this conversation where we left off when we start quarter three. So stay tuned.
It's time to get undomesticated. It's time for Labatt Blue. Time to get off the couch and on the beach, on the trails, on the lake, onto what you love doing best. Get in touch with your adventurous side. Get out the ATV, the tent, the sunscreen. Get out the cooler and fill it high with Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, because nothing goes better with the great outdoors. It's time to get up, get out, get undomesticated. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.